Hey everybody, welcome in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. On today's episode, we are going to continue looking at the Orioles' undrafted free agent signings, the seven of them that they have signed so far since the draft ended a couple of weeks back. And of course, we're also going to talk about Major League Baseball's plan to play with the news breaking on Tuesday night that the owners and the Players Association, along with Rob Manfred, the commissioner, have agreed to a plan for now to start spring training on July 1st, opening day, either the 23rd or 24th of July, and play into October and beyond, potentially, to get this 2020 season through. But of course, a lot of obstacles still, with the number one being the coronavirus still being very present in the United States. So still a lot of questions. It's good news, but it's still a lot of questions to answer. But we'll go into that agreement and what it means for baseball on the latter half of this pod. But at the beginning here, we wanted to continue our series of looking at the Orioles' undrafted free agent signings. And today we're going to look at another reliever that the Orioles picked up. It is Thomas Girard. He is a right-hander, 5'11". Out of Duke University, and he was the Blue Devils' closer for the last two seasons. He was just a junior this year, so he did not get drafted and had the opportunity to go back to school next year for his senior year, but decided to sign with the Orioles as an undrafted free agent, and the Simsbury, Connecticut native who played at Duke for 3 years signs with the O's. In 3 years at Duke, he ended up appearing in 45 games, all of them out of the bullpen, and had the ERA right around 3 in his career. This year at Duke in 2020, he made 9 appearances out of the bullpen and picked up 4 saves. In 13 innings, he allowed 4 hits, 5 runs, and 3 homers. He struck out, though, 23 and walked just 1. The ERA was at 3.46, so a pretty good junior season. He was lights out as a sophomore when he took over the closer role in 2019, 28 appearances, a 2.33 ERA. He threw 46 and a third innings and allowed just 12 runs, 61 strikeouts to just 18 walks. He only appeared in 8 games and had a 4.91 ERA as a freshman in 2018, but pitched in some big games. Last year, Duke went to a super regional where they bowed out to Vanderbilt, the eventual national champions, but he's been on some good Duke teams, and he's had a really good career as the Duke closer, but there are questions about him. Again, just 5'11", how does the fastball play? You know, not really your typical closer build. However, he's got one of the best sliders in the country, and we will talk about that a lot as well today with our guest. He is the play-by-play voice of Duke baseball. It's Chris Edwards, who joins us here on the pod to talk about the Duke reliever, Thomas Girard. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Connor, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so we wanted to have you on to talk about one of the Orioles' 6 undrafted free agent signings so far, who is Thomas Girard, the right-hander for the Blue Devils, who was their leader in saves last year and somewhat of the closer, definitely a back-end reliever for this Duke team. So let's start there. He had the 9 saves in 2019, had 4 of them in 9 appearances in 2020. Was he a definite, you know, 8th, 9th inning closer, or was he more of a, did he get moved around a little bit more in his role, especially the last 2 years?
I think definitely the last 2 years, Connor, he was the closer. He was the guy you counted on to come in the 8th inning, sometimes to get you maybe a 4 or 5 out save. I can remember a game last year against Wake Forest where he went, I think, 3 1/3, 3 2/3 against Wake Forest, really just grinded out a bunch of innings, got Duke off the field several different times. He's just such a grinder, such a competitor, and that's what made him such a good fit in that spot for Duke, the guy that could come in and just slam the door, and you knew when Thomas was coming in, more than likely, you were going to leave with a W.
And now last year, you know, he got into 28 games. He had the 9 saves. Was he transitioned into that role last year? Was he the closer by opening day 2019?
Yeah, he was pretty much the closer by the start of last year. There was still some movement a little bit. I think Duke was still trying to figure out pieces early in the season. I mean, you look at that 2019 season for Duke, they started 3-9 in ACC play. And you're kind of just wondering, okay, are they going to figure it out? And then they started to, had a really good month of April. And I think Thomas was a big part of that month of April. He was the closer from the start, Connor, but he really kind of came into his own toward the back half of the season. He started to figure out the role a little bit more. I think he figured out how the coaching staff was going to use him, and it was going to be more in that consistent eighth, ninth inning. And he was a guy that could take the ball day in and day out. He could give you, you know, two innings on Friday, another inning and a third on Saturday, and would still be fresh enough to go on Sunday if needed. Obviously, the coaching staff protected him a little bit and didn't want him to pitch on three straight days if he'd already extended earlier in the weekend. But yeah, by the end of the season, he was certainly into his own. Had some lights out saves for the Blue Devils, especially in that NCAA tournament in the regional in Morgantown, where he was able to help Duke beat West Virginia and go to the championship game and ultimately win the regional for a second time in 2 years.
Yeah, and for Girard, you know, you look at these numbers, and especially this year, and of course just the nine games, he was unbelievable. 23 strikeouts and one walk in 13 innings. Last year, the 28 games, a 2.33 ERA, striking out almost 12 batters per nine. But you look at the stature, and he's not the biggest guy, and he's maybe not the body you would think of a closer at just 5'11". So you think that works in his advantage at all when he steps onto the mound?
Yeah, I think that definitely translates. And I think the thing that for him is the key to his success, and I'm sure you've heard everybody else talk about it, is that wipeout slider he has. Certainly has a really good fastball that plays up a little bit, but that slider is really his go-to out pitch. If he can have control of the slider, he's going to be tough to hit. And what's really, I think, helped Thomas, and he may tell you the same thing, he's actually roomed with Bryce Jarvis the last year or so. So those two guys, Jarvis, the 18th overall pick by the Diamondbacks this year, those two guys have been roommates for the last couple of years. They've been in the same major. They've really spent every single day together. And I think by those two guys living together, talking pitching, talking baseball, that's probably really helped Thomas a lot. And if you talk to Thomas, I'm sure he'll give Dusty Blake, Duke's pitching coach, a whole lot of credit. Dusty's really been influential in the development of both Girard and Jarvis. But it's that slider, to get back to your initial point, it's that slider that really is the go-to pitch for Girard.
Yeah, and talking with the coaching staff, as you said, and that slider especially, you know, is it that one pitch that makes him so good? And then kind of where does it rank up there? Because obviously in the ACC, you guys see a lot of arms with a lot of good stuff. And where does that slider kind of fall in there with the stuff you've seen from some other arms?
Yeah, I think it's one of the better sliders from a reliever. Obviously, there are some other guys that have gone high in the draft. A guy like a Reed Detmers has a pretty good slider. But Thomas is able to be a little deceptive with that slider, and I think that's what helps because he's got a little bit of herky-jerky in his delivery. I think that helps him a little bit. I would say from a reliever standpoint, it's probably one of the top sliders in the conference. I think in order to be super successful, may have to develop one more pitch. You wonder if it's maybe some sort of curveball, a changeup, something like that, that could help him deceive hitters a little bit more. But I think definitely it's that fastball slider that can get him maybe into the next couple of levels of pro ball if he can continue to consistently command the slider and the fastball.
Now, Girard's kind of interesting because this isn't the case always, but a lot of the time, you know, guys come in from high school as starting pitchers and they might get a couple chances to start before they kind of move into a relief at the Division I level. But he's been a reliever through and through for 3 years. Did he come in even as a reliever like that? And was there ever a chance where he would potentially be a starter, or has it been kind of a bullpen role since day one on campus for him?
Yeah, I think it's been a bullpen role since day one. You know, he didn't pitch a ton his freshman year. And if you talk with Chris Pollard, the head coach, and even if you talk with Thomas a little bit, they'll point to that freshman year, especially the fall of Thomas's freshman year, where it wasn't a great fall. He didn't have a great debut in terms of the inner squads and some of the other stuff that the college baseball teams do. And coach was like, hey, you know, I don't know. Maybe we'll just have to kind of wait and see where it goes. He didn't get a lot of appearances his freshman year. And coach went to him and he's like, hey, you got to figure some stuff out. And this speaks to Thomas's competitiveness and his determination. He went out and got a whole lot better. He went out to the New England Collegiate Baseball League his freshman year, the summer going into a sophomore year. And he was an all-star in that league. And I think that's where he started to really figure some things out. figure out the slider, figure out how to pitch, how to command the zone. And he came back as a sophomore, an entirely different pitcher. And I think a lot of the time that he spent that summer in New England really helped him. And that's what allowed him to pole vault into that closer reliever his second year and ultimately his last couple of years.
Yeah, and so he plays the 3 years, and obviously he would have had another year of eligibility, and he doesn't get drafted. Kind of a two-parter here. One, was there a feel around, you know, if this were a 40-round draft, kind of where he would have fallen in? And then from him, you know, obviously he signs with the Orioles as an undrafted free agent to go pro. Was there thought from him, if you know that, about coming back for a senior season?
So, to answer your question, I'll start with the last one. I haven't really had a chance to talk to him a whole lot, so I'm not sure how much thought there was or what the process was for him to come back for maybe a senior season. I know there have been a couple of guys that have already signed, Thomas and Matt Mervis, who was another senior that could have come back. He signed with the Cubs earlier in the week. But I don't know from Thomas's perspective what his situation was or what he was thinking in terms of wanting to start his professional career. As far as the draft, I think if it's a typical year where it's a 40-round draft, I think Thomas is probably somewhere in the 10 to 12-rounder area there. I think he's an arm that's got a lot of upside, a lot of projectability. Scouts that I talked to really seem to like his stuff, and I think that's why he's a good fit with the Orioles, trying to rocket up the farm system a little bit. It's a little bit disheartening, I think, Connor, for a lot of these guys that have worked so hard their whole life to get drafted. And then we get to this point, and it's not their fault. It's the circumstances, certainly. But to work so hard to put themselves in a position to be drafted, and then ultimately you come down and you only have five rounds, and then these guys are making really tough decisions of, okay, do I want to come back to school, or do I want to sign for potentially only $20,000 and not get all of that $20,000 up front? It's really tough for some of these guys. I don't envy them at all having to make these decisions.
Yeah, it definitely makes them tough for them. We talked so much about 2019 and what he did, but honestly, this year, I mean, he was – the strikeout to walk numbers are ridiculous, 23-1 in 13 innings, of course, before the season gets cut short. Were there any times this year where you thought he had even stepped it up another notch as compared to 2019?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was on a path to be really good. He could have had a chance this year, Connor, if we would have been able to play the full season. That I think to end the year as Duke's all-time saves leader. But that's how good of his stuff was in the first couple weeks of the season. Now, I didn't get a chance to see every single game to start the season that Duke played because of the women's basketball responsibilities that I have. But just the little bit that I got to see Thomas, it was phenomenal just to see the jump he made from last year to this season and just how much better his stuff played. And I'm not sure if that's, you know, another year with Coach Blake and in the system or maybe with Bryce again and those guys really getting after it. I mean, to have those guys as roommates, everybody knows he was and 18th overall through a perfect game. But to have those guys rooming together, I don't know that we can overstate how important that was for both of those guys just to have someone to bounce ideas off of, to talk pitching. And I think that really helped both those guys because they're able to – really study the data. Duke is big into the TrackMan stuff, and as most programs are, but the spin rate on the fastball, and especially on the slider for Girard, is just phenomenal stuff.
Last thing for you, Chris, before we let you go, you talked about the slider and just his development as well, but you know, as a whole for Thomas Girard, you know, obviously he gets put a little behind the eight ball as an undrafted free agent, but you know, between the mindset of him, the makeup, the stuff itself, you know, what do you think is the one thing that could propel him to the major leagues at some point, even as an undrafted free agent?
Yeah, certainly the slider. But I think more than anything, Connor, it's the toughness. It's the blue-collar attitude that Thomas has every day, bringing the lunch pail, wearing the hard hat. That's one of the mantras that Duke embraces as one of their team philosophies, is being blue-collar, you know, having that workmanlike approach. Thomas really embraces that, and I think because he's so competitive, he's so determined, and he's got that work-like presence, I think that's going to help him exponentially as he starts to rocket up the system and hopefully get to the big leagues one day.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us to talk about Thomas Girard, one of the exciting undrafted free agents that the Orioles have signed. And as you said, you know, he's a guy who definitely would have been picked in the draft had it been a usual year, but we thank you again for coming on and hope you're staying safe.
Connor, thanks so much for having me. All the best.
Wanted to tell you about Built Bars. They're tasty and they're healthy. It's a protein bar, but it tastes like a candy bar. You can get it in 16 different flavors. They're all covered in chocolate, easy to eat, and good for you as well. Great for a health-conscious person. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Just 20 grams of protein in, for example, the peanut butter brownie bar, which that's the best flavor combination right there. Peanut butter brownie, you can't beat that one. Just 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. You can't beat that in a protein bar that's good for you, and it really tastes good as well. So you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. So again, our thanks to Chris Edwards, the voice of Duke Baseball, for joining us to talk about one of the Orioles' undrafted free agent signings, Thomas Girard. And of course, we talk a lot about that slider, but it's well known across the country. That's how we got great hitters out across the ACC, some great hitters out in the country as well, using that slider to his advantage, good against righties, good against lefties, and that's the pitch. I mean, obviously, you know, we talk about it with Chris. He might need to develop a third solid pitch to get himself through the minor leagues, but that slider is going to be the one that scouts are always going to be looking at, and it's the one that's going to continue to advance him up the Orioles system. Now, of course, besides the undrafted free agents, we'll continue to talk about them, but big baseball news on Tuesday night, as we talked about at the top, Major League Baseball owners, the Players Association, the Commissioner Rob Manfred, they've all come together and have agreed on the framework to a 60-game season with opening day scheduled for either July 23rd or July 24th at this moment. Now, still, of course, a lot of obstacles, which I'll get to. But let's just play it out and let you know how it would play out if coronavirus or other things don't come in and stop this season. So teams would report to spring training on July 1st. And if that seems soon, it is. That's next week. That's the end of next week, July 1st. It looks like the spring trainings will be in the home cities. They will not be in Florida, or at least most of them will not be in Florida with the big spike of outbreaks going on right now in the Sunshine State. Of course, all those people at the Phillies complex in Florida testing positive and a spike in cases. Looks like most of the spring trainings will be at the home ballparks in the home cities. Now, the big things about the negotiations and the agreement, besides, of course, the 60 games, it kind of goes back to what they had agreed on in March, the Players Association and the owners, and all this back and forth where the owners were just asking for the same thing over and over again. They finally basically ended up agreeing on what they had talked about back in March, in a March 26th agreement, a huge document, over 100 pages of health and safety guidelines as well, talking about players, you know, having the opportunity to opt out of the season if they don't feel it would be good for their health, or if they have immunocompromised family members who live with them, giving them the option, it looks like, to opt out because of that as well. And it's happened, you know, you look at the NBA the last couple of days, Avery Bradley and Davis Bertans, Bradley of the Lakers, Bertans of the Wizards, both opting out of the resume of the NBA season in Orlando because of health concerns and different reasons. You saw in the NWSL, the entire Orlando Pride team, because some players tested positive, have opted out of their tournament that they're going to play for their season here in a couple weeks. So it's definitely something that's going to happen across the leagues. And listen, there's going to be players, if this season happens, that do not play because of health concerns. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of reasons, whether, you know, their spouses are pregnant, or if someone in their house is immunocompromised, or if the players are immunocompromised, or if they just don't feel like it's safe enough and worth the long-term risk for them to play in this truncated season. You're going to see a good amount of players, I think, opt out if this season does go forward. But past that, the players are going to get the fully prorated portion of their salary. So for 60 games, it ends up being about, you know, if you do the math, a little more than a third of the season, and they will get those full prorated salaries, which they were fighting for during these negotiations. But the league is also going to implement certain other things that will go in just for this year to kind of see how they work and then move forward, of course, with the collective bargaining agreement up after the 2021 season and a lot of things to talk about after that as well. But the 60 games will look like this. The teams for those 60 games will play just their division and then the corresponding division in the National League. So, for example, the Orioles will play mostly games against its AL East foes, and then all other games will be against the teams in the NL East. So the way it will break down, they'll play 10 games against each team in their division. So 10 against the Yankees, 10 against the Red Sox, 10 against the Rays, and 10 against the Blue Jays. And then they'll play 4 each against all of the NL East teams. So they'll have 4 against the Nats, 4 against the Mets, 4 against the Phillies, 4 versus the Braves, and 4 versus the Marlins. If you think that's not good for the Orioles, well, you're right. Saw people tweeting out the strength of schedules according to last year's records. The Orioles would have the third most difficult schedule in baseball with this framework, because you got to remember, you're playing a Yankees team that is going to be maybe a World Series favorite this year, a Rays team that's bringing back everyone from a playoff team, a Red Sox team that even though they traded Mookie Betts, they still have a lot of good players on their roster, 2 years removed from a World Series, a Blue Jays team with a really good young core, and this might have been the year they started to compete back to the playoffs. You look at the other division, you have the defending champions in the Nationals, you have the Braves that won around 100 games and won that division, you have a Mets team that won 86 games last year, competed for the playoffs, a lot of good players on that roster, Pete Alonso. Phillies team with Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto now, who looked to improve on last year and have signed Zach Wheeler. And then, of course, you have the Orioles and the Marlins playing those schedules. Going to be tough for those two teams. Other than that, big positive, at least from my vantage point, and I hope most people's vantage point, the National League will use a designated hitter in this season, so universal DH for at least this year, and we hope that continues. No one wants to see pitchers hit about 100 in total and lay down bunts. In extra innings, this is a rule that's gotten a lot of pushback, but it's been in the minor leagues for the last couple of years. In extra innings, they will start with a runner on second to try and avoid those really long extra inning games and see how that works out this season. It's happened in the minors for a couple years. It works pretty simply. You're tied after 9, top of the 10th inning. The away team, their last out of the 9th inning, goes out and stands on second base, and you just play from there. And then the same thing happens in the bottom of the 10th. Last out from the bottom of the 9th goes out, stands on second base, or you can use a pinch runner from someone on the bench if you'd like. That runner, it basically gets assumed like they reached on an error to second base. However, the team doesn't get charged with an error, but the run is unearned, so it does not affect the ERA of the pitcher, and then you play from there. And some people are you know, trying to say it's ruining the game. It's a you know, just kind of something to speed up the game for no reason. But it's been pretty fun in the minors. I watched it all summer last year when I was with the Hagerstown Suns. I'm going to bring some more excitement to extra innings. I'm in favor of that one. Something I was surprised by, they did put in a trade deadline. I thought maybe it wouldn't happen, but there will be a trade deadline. It will be August 31st, not July 31st, which is less than a month before the regular season would end. Roster size, it'll start at 30 men on the active roster, pretty big roster for the first 2 weeks. Then it'll go to 28 2 weeks later. And then 2 weeks after that, it'll go to 26, and it will stay at 26 for the remainder of the season. Of course, if there's doubleheaders, you would still be able to bring up that extra player, make it 27. There'll be taxi squads for each roster. The teams can have as many as 60 players available to play in Major League games. So you've got those 30 you start with and then 30 more. So a lot of minor leaguers, despite it looking like there probably won't be a minor league baseball season, we get a chance to be on that taxi squad and have a chance to make the majors. There will also be a COVID-19 injured list with no minimum or maximum length of time. So if a player does test positive, they can go on that injured list and stay on it for as long as they want. And then the other two injured lists will be 10 days and then 45 days instead of the usual 60 days for the other injured list. Now, of course, a lot of changes there. Again, the 60 games, July 23rd or 24th will be opening day. And it looks like September 27th right now would be the final day of the regular season. And then they would head to the 10-team playoff structure, the same playoffs that Major League Baseball has been using since 2012. They did not get that expanded playoff field put in for 2020, but a good chance that could be put in next year and beyond. So that's what you need to know for the potential restart of the Major League Baseball season. But of course, there's the flip side. Coronavirus still prevalent in the United States. Cases are still spreading. Places are still spiking with cases around the country, especially in a place like Florida that I talked about earlier. All these leagues, not just Major League Baseball, all these leagues with these return to play plans are going to have to think about the coronavirus, the health concerns, not just for the players, but for their families, for the staff members, for the workers at the stadium, at the hotels, everyone that works for the ball club. You got to take that into effect. Coronavirus did not go away. It's still here, just as bad as it was a couple of months ago when all these sports were shut down. And there is a chance, a really good chance, that even though all this has been put in place, doesn't mean a season's going to happen because of coronavirus. Reported yesterday that Charlie Blackmon, along with a few other Rockies players, recently tested positive for the coronavirus. That's, you know, really the first Major League Baseball star who it's been reported that has tested positive. And more people are going to test positive, more people in baseball, and it's going to be something the league's going to have to deal with. And I hope there's a baseball season. I would love to see Major League Baseball this year, but it just seems like it's not something that health-wise can happen, at least at this point. But if it can, there were the guidelines and what they've set out. And again, planning to start spring training July 1st, end of next week. We will see if that does happen and this does get started up. And we do have an opening day near the end of July. So for the rest of the week, we will continue looking at the undrafted free agents for the Orioles. We're going to talk about T.T. Bowens out of Central Connecticut State on Friday. We're going to have one of his assistant coaches, Pat Hall, join the podcast for a good talk about Bowens, the power hitter out of Connecticut. Of course, earlier this week, we continued to look at the undrafted free agents, Ryan Watson out of Auburn. We had Josh Vitale, who covers Auburn baseball, on the pod on Monday to talk about him. So you can go back in the archives and find the other MLB draft breakdown episodes. So this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And if you're looking for more baseball and thinking about your fantasy baseball season as the schedule gets aligned, and maybe fantasy baseball will start up with the season as well here in the next month, then maybe check out the latest episode of Locked On Fantasy Baseball.